John sounds counterintuitive this morning. He tells us that those who love their lives will lose it, and those who hate their lives in this world will keep them for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there will my servant be also. I have an urge to cheat into Palm Sunday, but I'm not going to do it. So this is what discipline looks like. Homiletical discipline. I'm going to stick to this Sunday. So in order to do that, I'm going to pick a very tight little topic and just hopefully say just a couple minutes on this. And if it goes too long, just start giving me signals. So I want to say just a quick word about scarcity. The question of scarcity, because I think that that's a big theme for this morning, at least how I'm hearing this go around. Scarcity. So as you know, as I've said before preaching this season, that the backdrop to the season of Lent is the story of the Exodus. It is the primary story that helps us make sense of this notion of movement, right? Movement from captivity into freedom. And while we might very much like to believe that sort of once you get to freedom, everything's done and we're set, of course we know the story, right? We get to freedom and then we wander for 40 years, right? Because freedom's really complicated. Freedom is really hard. And so the backdrop of the season is this notion of having chosen to free ourselves from captivity, to risk doing something new, recognizing the change that that involves, always some sense of insecurity, picking ourselves up and moving. And of course, scarcity shows up in the storyline from Exodus right away. Right away. I'll get to that in a second. So my entry point to the topic of scarcity is this. I know it well. I often live by scarcity. Often. But it started with a bowl of green grapes. I think I've mentioned this bowl of green grapes here before. I was at a picnic with my family on Lake Coeur d'Alene. It was not just me and my siblings who I always was fighting for food with. Middle child, right? So I never got my fair share. So I was always used to competing for limited resources with them, or at least from my perspective, limited. But now we had another half dozen cousins. And my cousins and I were sitting down around a picnic table, beautiful summer day. And in the midst of this perfect moment comes this big bowl of green grapes, right? They've been chilled all day. And of course, I took it upon myself to make sure that I get enough to grab the bowl of grapes and empty the bowl, you know, right in front of me, and then to put the empty bowl back in the middle of the table. Because, well, why wouldn't you do that? I mean, if you wanted to have enough grapes, you would make sure, right, strike first. And so I thought that made a lot of sense, right? I've been doing that for years with my siblings. It made sense to do it with my cousins there as well. Well, my mother was shocked. And it was as if she was there even before I did it. Because when I did it, I very quickly got picked up out of my seat and moved from the picnic table and chastised quite loudly, I recall, on the side, sort of on the side of the cabin. And of course I thought, what? What have I done wrong? I mean, this seems perfectly fair. And she pointed out to me that really wasn't how the world works. It didn't make sense that I would take everything for myself. And I just was really clear, well, this is a limited good. There's clearly only this many grapes here, and if I don't get mine, then I don't get mine. Scarcity. In that moment, my mother pointed out, I was not my best self. That's not the language I would have used for it. Erica, the teacher, she would say, I wasn't my best self. I was not at my most generous, you might say. I was not at my most generous. This, while it's my story, seems to be our story. Right, and it's our story. We know that it's our story because it's in our sacred scripture. In fact, it's in the one story that we have to read every great vigil, every year. We have to read the story of the Exodus because it is in us, this tension between trusting in God's promises that there will be enough and our actual lived experience, oftentimes, that there seems not to be enough. And there's a tension there. It's a very real tension. And we know that the tension is true because I think it's only two verses after everyone's crossed the Red Sea, two verses later, they've praised very quickly and they are immediately complaining that they're starving to death. We're dying out here. Two verses later. From praise and thanksgiving to scarcity. Very, very quickly. And it seems to be part of the human condition. Now, we know that this tension follows the people of Israel, the tribes of Israel, forever. It follows them forever. It is the theme that undergirds all of the ups and downs of the empire. When times are good, when Israel is strong, when they're one of the nations that people look to for leadership, for defense, believe it or not, this tiny little nation, when times are good, rather than give it all away, they seem to have this tendency to circle the wagons, to build an empire, to be self-protective, to become defensive and fearful. That's what empire looked like for them. And while they had a vocation to share the light, right, they'd received this vocation long ago, to be the light to the nations. They had this vocation all along. They knew it. It was their story and they knew it. And yet, it was their instinct to circle the wagons and protect their own tails as soon as the going was good. As soon as the going was good, they wondered, is this going to last? Is this going to last? Let's protect ourselves. Let's store everything up. The prophets, of course, are the ones who show up. They're very unpopular because they remind them of this original vocation. The prophets show up and they say, remember that you were an alien in a foreign land. Do you remember that? Do you remember that at one point you were struggling? Do you remember your origins? Do you remember that there are widows and orphans among you who need the resources that you're consolidating for the empire? They actually need those things because, remember, all of you needed them at one time because you were all starving, you were all lost, you were all scared to death, wondering where your next meal was going to come from. Do you remember that? Do you remember? Well, we know what they did with the prophets. They didn't make it. They would tell them on a regular basis, fear not, in the midst of a fearful society. They would tell them to give it away to a society that was ready to hang on to everything, to hoard it. And they were told, just give yourselves away. That is your vocation. Give yourselves away. God has assured you there is always enough for you. You will be fine. Your task is to give yourself away. Scarcity. It doesn't always keep us at our best or most generous. So we've got this story today from Jesus, who sometimes in John is a little bit obscure to get at. We've got this idea from Jesus that we're supposed to lose our lives. In fact, he actually uses the hyperbole of hating our lives, a way of letting go of this need for security and constant safety. We're supposed to give our lives away. And the image he uses for it is this idea of being planted in the soil. He says that unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. If it dies, it bears much fruit. Give your life away. Multiply it. That is what God's abundance looks like. There's something here, I think, for us at St. Mark's about figuring out what it looks like to plant our own lives in the soil of this place. What does it look like to be planted in the soil here on Loring, here in Minneapolis, in Minnesota? What does it look like to plant ourselves in the soil of the larger church of national concerns, political, economic, social, religious concerns? What does it look like to plant ourselves in that soil? Recognizing the risks inherent in that. Recognizing that we may lose something of ourselves. In fact, we may lose a lot. But it seems to be the invitation that I'm hearing. Maybe it's more than an invitation. It might be an expectation that faithfulness for faith communities and for individual faithful people within it has something to do regularly with resisting the urge towards scarcity. Regularly practicing the process of losing our lives, whatever that looks like. Regularly giving ourselves away just to resist the urge to hoard. And it's a real urge. It's a real urge to circle the wagons and protect ourselves. But Jesus says, no, actually, you're supposed to lose those lives. That's how you'll find them. You'll know who you are when you've lost yourself. When you've given yourself away, that's where you'll find your true self. When you relinquish the fear of scarcity and all of the misplaced security needs that come with it. Kenosis, we say, kenosis, self-emptying. So this weekend is the six-month point of my time here. Let the groaning begin. Months. And it's fair to ask ourselves, I mean, you know, half jokingly, if we're having any fun yet. Right? That was always grandma's joke. Usually Thanksgiving night, making dinner just before she'd serve it. Are we having any fun yet? At the 6 month point, it's fairly obvious to me that this real tension, and I want you to hear me say it in the most gentle, affirming, compassionate in it kind of way, this tension is real here, and I appreciate it, I understand it. I know that we've got needs to preserve a certain life that we've had together that is both financial and otherwise. We have real safety and security needs as a faith community here. Every faith community does, particularly nowadays. I think we could say that we've experienced some sense of deliverance. I think we could say that we have experienced at least some celebration with tambourines and singing on the backside of the Red Sea. In transitions, we call that the honeymoon. And I love honeymoons. It's been fun. I've enjoyed it. And the reality is, I know it, and everybody here knows it, and the bishop is already chuckling about it, as are all my colleagues around the diocese in the country. They know that that is going to wear off, and that that's when we decide what we're going to do together moving forward. That's when we decide whether we're going to, well, shall I say, start complaining about starving out here in the wilderness, or whether we're going to really do the hard work of believing and of trusting in a God who has called us to this very moment, who has assured us that we have everything we need and more, not just to be the church we've been, but more importantly to be the church that God needs us to be, which may be very different. But if we circle the wagons and we desire to be secure and safe in something we've been, it doesn't really leave us open to God's movement among us. It doesn't really leave us open to planting ourselves in new fields with new needs and cares and concerns. But that's the vocation in front of us, is to see if we can't risk just a little longer staying wide open to possibilities. staying wide open to surprise, to imagining something new for ourselves in small ways and in big ways, to see if we can't continue to stretch just a little bit, just a little bit. That's the challenge before us. That's the invitation before us. We've also got God's promise, which is that we will always have enough. There is manna in every wilderness. And if we're paying attention to it, we'll find that it's right here among us, right? So we can do the hard work. It doesn't have to empty us completely, but it does mean we're going to bury ourselves in the world as it is, and we're going to pay attention to what that world needs us to be today. Not just what it honored us for in the past, not just what it has delighted in us, really even at the present moment, but that we would together love one another and love our God enough to say yes to this present moment and to God's uncertain future. Will we live by scarcity? Or will we live by abundance? That is the simple question before us.